major problem of life is learning how to handle the costly interruption, the door that slammed shut, the plan that got sidetracked, the marriage that failed, or that lovely poem that didn't get written because someone knocked on the door. Those words were found scrawled on a piece of paper in the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's briefcase following his assassination on April 4, 1968. Though his birth date is January 15th, we celebrate it today, January 21st, in a formal sense as a nation. Please visit the January 21st, 2008 entry at the Indie Business blog for my personal reflections on the life and legacy of Dr. King. This is Indie Business Radio for Monday, January 21st, 2008. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's guest Indie co-host is Dawn Fitch of Puka Pure and Simple in New Jersey. In addition to being one of the most outstanding colleagues that I have in the indie business arena, Dawn has been featured on national morning talk television shows, nationally syndicated radio shows, and she and her business partners, known as the Pukalitas, have also taken the indie beauty business industry by storm. Dawn's book, to document her entrepreneurial journey, was published just a few months ago, and I am so excited to welcome her as today's indie guest co-host. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, Dawn.
Hi, Donna Maria. Thank you for having me.
Well, you've got quite a story to tell, but before we get to that a little bit, Dawn, I'd love to have your reflections on what Martin Luther King's legacy means to you and your Pukalitas and your extended family as well.
It's even so hard to put into words. I mean, he was an extraordinary man. We are four African-American women in the business, and just the doors that he's opened, I can't even, it seems so simple to say the doors that he's opened, his faith through adversity, with his civil disobedience, winning the Nobel Peace Prize. He was just a phenomenal man, and everything that he's done has led us to the place that we as a people are today. His open doors that we would never have been able to walk through without him. And sometimes I hope that our children, being further away, are able to understand the journey that he went through to get us where they are today, the liberties and things that they enjoy, the freedoms that they enjoy today. I just hope they understand that everything is because of what he's done, and that he is, and what he stood for was just phenomenal, and not just something that they read in a book and just a story and just a speech. And, you know, so I think it's our job to pass that through. So we enjoy everything that he's done, our lives, just living our lives. Mm-hmm. So, and being able to start a business and do the things that we've been able to do. So we are thankful and we're humbled on this day.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, you talk about the importance of passing along that part of history to our children. And there are several places on the Internet, and also I think CNN is running a historical perspective that has a lot of valuable videotape of Martin Luther King's messages and even some of the marches and some of the really difficult-to-watch video of people being mauled by dogs and things of that nature. And we have to be really thoughtful about when we introduce our children to videos like that. But I agree with you that it is really important to make sure that they see it. And my children are 6 and 4, and they've seen some of it, and the world we live in today is so different, they can hardly believe it.
Right. And it's kind of like a double-edged sword. We have been able, through the thing that he's done, to shield our children from so much racism that they don't understand what we went through to get to this point, as a people, what we went through to get to this point. So we've done a good job, but I think in order to continue doing a good job, we have to teach them how we got here, that it wasn't always like this. And you're right, we have to be careful about how we introduce it to them. It's traumatic to children.
You know, Dawn, you make another good point. it's so interesting. When I grew up in Washington, D.C., and my parents, of course, grew up in the midst of all of the racism and the civil rights struggle for African-American freedoms in this country, I don't want to make the mistake of making it seem like that's the only civil rights struggle there's ever been, because it isn't. But we're talking specifically about that one. And my parents, you know, they really just were so pained by some of their memories that they didn't really share a whole lot of them with us until we were grown. I remember when my dad took me to visit colleges, I had decided I wanted to go to the University of South Carolina. And at that time, they were flying the Confederate flag on top of the State House, which was located in the middle of campus. And when we arrived there our first day, we got, you know, off the plane and took a cab to campus, and we were doing a little walk around the campus. And my father looked up at the State House, and he said, "You can't go here." And I remember thinking, "What do you mean I can't go here?" And he said, "Look up there. Do you know what that is?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, it's the American flag and the Confederate flag, and so I know about that, but we don't live in that time anymore." And he said, "Well, but the flag's up there, and I don't feel comfortable with you being here." And that for me was such an eye-opening thing, because we had a conversation that night, Don, where he shared with me some things that he'd never really talked about with me before that happened in his life personally. I'd seen all the videotapes and I read all the history books, but he told me about some things that happened to him. And he had tears in his eyes. And I remember thinking, well, you know, maybe I can't go here. But unfortunately, it was the only school I'd applied to, and I got in, so I had to go there. But it's just kind of perspective that brought. And immediately when I arrived there, I started seeing things I never, ever had seen, you know, in the town where I grew up in.
Right, and a lot of us are very shielded from it. Our children are definitely even more shielded. And like I said, that's a good thing. I mean, we want them to enjoy the liberties that were created for them, but they have to understand that it wasn't always like this. And sometimes, like just like you said, having a personal story, a parent, a grandparent, a great-grandparent, mm-hmm. can maybe sometimes bring it a little closer to home for them.
Yeah, well,
so that they understand.
Personal stories, Dawn, you've got a pretty magnificent one, and we don't have the ability and the time we have to tell the whole thing today, but I would like to share with my listeners a little bit about your journey to successful business ownership. How did you get the idea for starting your business, Dawn?
Well, I'll put in a quick nutshell for you, Dawn Maria. The business started about 7 years ago, and I wasn't feeling well. So just over the years of going to doctors back and forth and back and forth, and they just kept saying, "You're healthy, you're healthy, you're healthy," for years. I probably was sick for at least 10 or 12 years. And finally, they said it was hypoglycemia. Every time I went back, there was something else. So I started to police my own health care, and just to get into aromatherapy and essential oils and burning oils and massaging oils, just to try to make myself feel better, because they kept telling me I was healthy. So there was really no alternative but to kind of take it into my own hands and decide what I could do. I loved bath and body products, so I just started researching things that would maybe bother my system or bother me, that can go into your system or go in through your skin. And just turning over the bottles, became a label reader and just reading about different preservatives and different chemicals that were entering my system. And I decided, well, you know what, I'm just going to, you know, make some things that are a little more natural, that I know are good for me. And at the time, I was working in the music industry, and I had a good job. I enjoyed myself, and I decided it was time for me to move on and venture into some new things, and got another job. And I was doing design work. My degree is in design. And I was laid off of that job. They had massive layoffs. So I was home, and I was freelancing. So I was home, and I was doing some freelance design. And at the same time, I was developing just products, not for a business, just for my own sense of well-being. But money was limited, so I was making gifts for people. So I would make my oils and give them as birthday gifts and Christmas gifts. And my mother called us her pukalitas when we were little. So I made a label because I was a graphic designer. I wanted to look nice. I figured if I wasn't buying these people a real gift, I wanted to make it at least look pretty. And then, you know, friends of mine were like, you know, you developed a whole bunch of stuff. Why don't we just take it to a festival and sell it? So still I'm freelancing, had no idea that this was going to be a business. And needless to say, we went to the festival that day, myself and my friends and family, and we sold out. It was just amazing, of a product that people had never heard of. I had developed a whole line because I had been doing this for about a year before we actually, you know, took it to this festival. So I developed a whole line, a lot of different products. And from there, once we realized that it sold, we were like, oh, this is a business. And myself and my three partners, I always have to say their name, Donna Lynn, Trisha Ekawandi, and April Rees Mathis, started the business of Puka.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been about 7 years, and we're doing well. We're in 28 Whole Foods, and we have a retail warehouse, and we sell the products online. And we've been blessed with just national exposure and things, like I said, have been going well. We were just in the November issue of Black Enterprise Magazine.
Woo-hoo.
And yeah, and it's fabulous. And you have been...
Well, listen, Dawn, today's guest is going to talk to us about creating the demand for our products and services. Before he joins in, I don't mean to ask like a huge question that would take, I know you have far too many tips to share with us in, you know, a 60-second soundbite, but in terms of the mindset that you have in order to create the demand for products that are produced on a relatively small scale, you don't have a huge advertising budget, what would you say is what you keep foremost in your mind as you create the demand for your product from scratch, out of nothing?
As far as marketing, I think I would definitely say word of mouth.
Okay.
We do a lot of word of mouth. And also things that you can do for yourself for free, as far as just researching other websites.
Mm-hmm.
Join the website and just talk your product up. There's nothing, it's no cost. There's so many blogs and chat rooms, and you can kind of start doing your own marketing free of cost. And that's what we did a lot of, what can we do for free?
Mm-hmm.
So we did a lot of things like that, word of mouth, family, friends, the website, a newsletter to kind of keep people connected and make sure you always collect the email addresses, and definitely go and just see what other people are doing that are doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Join trade organizations like the Indie Beauty organization, and just keep yourself abreast of what's going on in your industry.
Yeah, it sounds like it's not expensive in terms of finances necessarily, but maybe in terms of time.
Time, definitely time. Yeah, it takes a lot of time to do even those things that I just said, to sit there and to research these websites, and,
right.
and you have commitment to this is what I want to do.
Right, right. Well, thank you for that insight, and certainly, you know, if you don't have a lot of money, you better find some time if you want to be in business. And we're going to talk after our break with Dr. Joel Freeman, author of If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand, A Powerful Jolt of Entrepreneurial Energy and Wisdom. That's what this book offers. And he's going to join us when we come back from our break. Don't touch that mouse. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and we are delighted to be joined this afternoon by our guest, Dr. Joel A. Freeman. He is an accomplished author, an internationally sought-after conference speaker, workshop facilitator, professional counselor, success coach, organizational culture change specialist, corporate trainer, and filmmaker. And I'm just scratching the surface there. Dr. Freeman, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Donna Maria. And Don, you forgot extremely bad dancer and off-key singer. Those
well,
are the main things.
Point, those are about the only two things we have in common. and the devoted father part.
Okay.
Dr. Freeman, I am just, you know, it's hard to know exactly where to start, but actually maybe it's not hard since today is our celebration as a nation of Dr. Martin Luther King's legacy. You have produced a movie that delves deeply into some of your insights on African history, and I'd love for you to share a little bit about the movie and also your reflections on the life and legacy of Dr. King to kick the show off today.
Well, first of all, I just feel very honored to have been able to be a part of the writing of the book, co-writing the book, and the co-creation of the film. It's called Return to Glory, subtitled The Powerful Stirring of the Black Man. And I think that, you know, just the whole idea of going into ancient times and trying to draw out wisdom lessons and that are truth-centric, that pull, that give us a perspective on how to live our lives today and what our purposes are, that go beyond a paycheck. I think that there's just so much there. And with Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, it's hard to put into words what he has done for the world at large. I just got back from Africa just a couple of months ago, spent 17 days in Ghana and Addis Ababa and Nairobi in different parts of Kenya. And just to see, even in Africa, the people I've talked with that mention his name, it just rolls off in the middle of a conversation just talking about his contribution. So it's not just something that's happened nationally here in the United States, but also internationally. The impact is far-reaching. And I think that one of the things that is so important is for this generation to begin to grasp the kind of sacrifice. I mean, he paid the ultimate sacrifice, but the kind of sacrifice that people have paid for our freedom, the measures of freedoms, the freedom that we all experience in life, our lifestyles and standards of living. It's just astonishing to think of what people have paid so that we can experience what we have. And Dr. Martin Luther King is one of the individuals who lived life at the tip of the plow, and any time he could have turned back and said, I want a more comfortable existence, and probably would still be alive today.
Yeah, he didn't turn back. And one of the things I wrote in a blog post this morning was, he had a dream so we could have a chance.
That's wonderful. I love that.
Well, I mean, and you know, I got to tell you, when I first got a copy of your book, I think your publicist sent it here, and I thought, you know, this is what a great entrepreneurial book. You know, this guy must have a, you know, a very successful business. And I started reading, you know, and I saw the endorsement from people like Ken Blanchard and Steve Forbes on the back. And then I said, well, let me go check out his website. And I went to the website, and I saw Return to Glory, about the stirrings of the black man, and I went, okay, wait, I'm on the wrong site here. But I, you know, what's fascinating is, of course, you know, now that I've spent some time at your website, and that is plural many times over, I have seen, you know, the points that you make about the passion that you have for the work that you do. And Dr. King certainly had that. And as indie business owners, I'd love to have your overall comments on how that passion really carries the day, because obviously passion can build a business, but it can't feed you.
Exactly true. And I think that dreams are a dime a million. You know, there's so many people. I was just talking to someone today, this morning, on the phone, and he was just talking with me about how challenged he was being 10 miles wide and 3 inches deep. He had many, many dreams. And we just talked a little bit about focusing. It's kind of like the sun is shining, but you get out a magnifying glass and you can focus that energy into one pinpoint and start a fire. You know, it harnesses all that energy into one particular spot. And I think that's what's important is for an individual to take a look at their passions and to really actually even list them and to put something down where they begin to realize, this is what I am passionate about. I talk to a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. I'm on a national tour. I've been speaking for Job Corps around the country. Mm-hmm. And many times I'll have 300, 500 young people in front of me, 15 to 25. Most of the people, most of the young people are between 17 and 19, 20 years of age. And I'll ask the question, how many want to be in business for yourself? How many want to be entrepreneurs? And 75, 80% of the hands go up. And the whole talk emerges around connecting now with later. To take a look at what you're doing now, and take a look at your friends, the people you hang around with, because you show me your friends and I'll show you your future. Take a look at what you're spending your time, your leisure money, all these things, what are you putting them into, because all of that is going to inform your future. And I take a middle-aged individual or someone who is in the reinvention process, maybe has worked for 20-plus years in a corporate job and suddenly is realizing I can't work here anymore because they're letting X number of percentage of people go, and I've got to think about what I want to do. People in the military who've been in for 20, 22 years and now are transitioning to civilian life, and what am I going to do with the rest of my life? That taking the steps, I think, and that's what I tried to do in the book,
mm-hmm.
is to help people to focus and to walk through the process to get to the place where they can start implementing, putting hands and feet to their passion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Don, I want you to feel free to jump in with any follow-up questions, but Joel, I do want to start with one of the chapters in your book that dovetails with what you just said. And that has to do with reinventing yourself. You tell a story about how you used to, like, disassociate yourself from computers. And, I mean, you know, in this day and age, in terms of technology, to have a business, I mean, can you afford to do that in any sense of the word?
Without rephrase that, please, for me.
Just disassociating yourself from computers as you did, you know, early on when people used to talk with you about being on the Internet. I remember I did a talk not too long ago, and one of the women, she was in her 50s, and she said, you know, I just don't have time for all that stuff, and it's not my generation, and she's wondering why she's struggling in her business.
Yes, I really believe that, for instance, if you don't have a website, you're not really in business. And that's where, especially, I'm 53 years of age, and, you know, I grew up in an era of hippies, you know, hitchhiking around North America, long hair, and all the rest that goes with it. And, you know, just coming into doing some more entrepreneurial things, I just really was proud of the fact that I'd written books that were in many languages around the world. I'd done it all by hand.
Mm-hmm.
I was not going to be involved with computers, and I outlined that a little bit in the book about my process of reinvention, and it came slowly where people, my friends began to share with me, and finally one of my friends, Jeff Wright from Chicago, he sat down with me and says, well, think of a term. And I'd been chaplain for the Washington Bullets for 19 years, the Wizards in the NBA, and so I put in the word Washington Bullets, and all this information came up, and it just blew my mind. 4 hours later, I said, I've got to get involved, because this is like a steamroller. If I'm not on the steamroller or participating in what is going on here, I'm going to get run over. And so for the next 6 months, told my wife and my family, and I just said, I've really got to ramp up on this, and I've got to focus on this. And I'm so thankful I took that time. It was very difficult. My oldest son, he was the most proficient at the time, and he was very patient with me and helping me understand. And so I think that for an individual listening who is wondering about the age of technology and whether how they're going to get on board, I would just say go to your local community college, or if you're part of a congregation, a church or a synagogue or whatever, you know, just to go and ask for young people to mentor you. And you'll be amazed at the number of people that will come alongside you and will help you through the process.
This is Indie Business Radio. We're talking today with Dr. Joel Freeman, author of If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand. Do join us, 800-773-0355. Joel, Don and I were talking before you came into the show this afternoon about the time that it takes, and one of the sentences in your book says that you have to become a zebra in a herd of horses. It sounds like, you know, we need to really challenge people to change their mindset about business.
Very true. You know, branding ourselves isn't nearly as painful as it sounds, but I think we have to determine our main strengths and then develop as a creative as possible spin to that particular strength. You know, it's kind of like the like you mentioned about zebras galloping, a zebra galloping with a herd of horses. You know, it looks like a horse, it runs like a horse, it even blends in with the rest of the herd. But if you look closely, there's black and white stripes. And so visually it causes it to stand out. And I think that's the purpose of a brand. Just to kind of give a quick example, you know, people fix computers. I mean, how many thousands of people fix computers?
Right.
But then you have someone who puts on a lab coat, maybe on their glasses, if they wear glasses, they put masking tape around the center, they put in a plastic pocket protector, and they start talking like they just escaped from the basement of the science center, you know, and they're all just all fired up about fixing computers. And then they put in, you know, maybe call it the Geek Squad or you know, these different groups that are out there, and just have some shtick to it, something that's humorous, something that's self-deprecating. And what happens is that they can not only stand out, but then provide outstanding customer service. And that's a winning combination. I know with my company, the Freeman Institute, it's a seven-word brand. And it's these seven words, dealing with people who drive you crazy. And those seven words, I went to the Patent Trademark Office, trademarked them. That's the title of the most popular seminar. It's what I do. It's my five-second response when someone says, "What do you do, Freeman?" And, well, I deal with people who drive you crazy. And it's my the way I get through gatekeepers. You know, if I want to talk to a key individual in a corporation and I talk with a gatekeeper and use this business-like person is just pushing people away, I just say, "Well, I have a seminar called Dealing with People Who Drive You Crazy." And I have a little mischievous grin on my face, and I telegraph that over the phone, and the person then says, "Oh," they start laughing. "We need that around here. See, I'll get you to Dr. Smith or Dr. Jones. You know, I'll get you through.
All right, we'll get you in right away."
That's right. And so it really helps, I think, to maybe get out of thesaurus, think of the different things about that you want people to feel from you and what you are all about. Start writing those words down, and then roll them around, bring them together, nothing too weird, nothing too crazy to throw against the wall to see what sticks. And then start developing something. Three words is great, five words is great, seven words is probably the top. And, you know, we don't want to go too far with this in terms of number of words, but develop some statement that brand sets you apart as a zebra in the midst of horses, so that people can see that you not only stand out, but you then can follow it up with great customer service.
Don, I know you have a really interesting experience in this regard. You've done a fantastic job of branding your products, you and your Pucalitas. What kinds of tips can you offer to kind of dovetail with what Joel's talking about?
I feel like it's exactly the same thing. And I kind of have said that before. I said a lot of people are making products, and a lot of people are using the same ingredients. But we had to find a way to say, okay, what's going to make them use Puka as opposed to another product? And I think that was definitely with your help, the branding of ourselves as Pukalitas, kind of more of a lifestyle and a blog and what we have to say. And like it, when it comes to the products, we're all sort of doing the same thing. But just like Joel said, if we didn't find something to make us stand out, then we would kind of be another horse in the crowd. So I don't want to call it a gimmick, but it is a niche, something that's a little more, put us in a different category as a reason that why people would choose us. Mm-hmm. So we did. We developed the logo, and we developed ourselves. So we kind of had people are very interested in a story. So the story is very attached to the business, and people call us because they want to know the story. In the blog, we put the girls got married, and we just kind of made it a little more personal so that you have more of an experience when you go to the website. You don't only buy products, but you find a little bit about us, and it may be interesting to you.
That's wonderful. And the thing about it is that Pucalitas does not create a kind of a quizzical crinkling your nose. What is that? Kind of repelling type of a feel, because sometimes
right.
People come up with something so cute that it repels. It's not really inviting. But when it's cute and it's different, unique, it's that zebra, you know, in the midst of but it draws people in, want to know more. That's wonderful. It's very sticky. You want to put sticky, like a honey all around it that draws and then makes them stick for a little bit until they find out more.
I have to write that down. I like that, the honey sticky analogy.
Well, you know, it's funny too, Joel, because you're again a perfect story of what you're describing, and I know you already knew that, but just from my own personal experience, again, getting your book and going to your website, I get a lot of books by entrepreneurs, and most of them are okay, and a few of them stand out, and I invite the authors to be on my show, and yours was one of those books. But when I went to the website that you have, I was like, wait a minute, this guy is a zebra in a herd of horses. It's not just business here. You've got this really interesting combination of stuff going on. And when I saw filmmaker, my husband is a video camera specialist, and I was like, you know, this is really interesting to me. How did you fit filmmaking in here? And how do you, I guess what I'm seeing is so many different things that you have brought together under one brand without being confusing. How do you do that?
Well, it's something that falls under a passion. The passion I have is helping people, and also the whole idea of I'm driven, and you probably heard of the book The Purpose Driven Life.
Yes.
Well, I have the curiosity driven life. I'm just motivated by curiosity.
Right.
And what happens is that I tried. It's not something that is even self conscious in trying to cobble something together artfully and say, oh, this all fits together.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been the way my life has gone, and I'm almost more passionate about my nonprofit stuff than I am about the profit making stuff. You know, I'm very thankful.
There's a chapter in your book on that too. I want to talk about that a little bit when we come back from our break, which my engineer tells me we have to take immediately because we've been enjoying this conversation so much. I want to let you guys know this is Indie Business Radio. 800-773-0355 if you have any questions or comments for the Pucalita or Dr. Joel Freeman. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to The Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to The Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back, everyone, to the final segment of today's Indie Business Radio Show. We're talking with Joel Freeman, that is my co-host, and I are talking with him. And before we took a break, Joel, we were talking about your nonprofit organizations that you started, and I'd like you to share a little bit about that, and I'd also like you to comment on a question I have. And
okay.
This is a discussion that's going on over at the IndieBusinessForum.com right now. Do you think that specialization in a business leads to extinction?
Well, let me first mention about the foundation. It's the Freeman Institute Foundation at freemaninstitutefoundation.org. And it's just something that I have four arenas of expertise, or four avenues of things that we're working on. One of them is developing Black history galleries in major cities across the country, United States, and then selected cities internationally, Canada, Europe, Africa, parts of South America, all the Caribbean countries, and just to really impact young people. And the film that I did with Don Griffin, I'm white, Don is African American, seems to have transcended into an international audience. And so we want to have this kind of be a place where people come in looking for culture and history. Then they see the film.
What's the film called again, Dr. Freeman?
It's called Return to Glory, subtitled The Powerful Stirring of the Black Man.
And we can see that at what website?
ReturnToGlory.org.
Okay.
ReturnToGlory.org. But that's something I'm very excited about, and I encourage entrepreneurs to start your own nonprofit organization even when you're in the infant stages of your company, you know, to getting things started. You start thinking in that direction. I'm 53. I'm in a semi-retired state in the sense of my financial setting, but I'm just in a spot where, you know, I'll be spending the rest of my life building galleries and speaking and writing books and doing all kinds of different things, doing a lot of open source things, a black history a curriculum from K through college, and then also doing something that reaches out to white people and just seeing what can be done in that regard. So it's just a real exciting thing. It gives me tremendous excitement and great passion to get involved in these types of things. And then also to parlay the gifts and the skills that I have to barter and to say, okay, I'll do a workshop for your company, which normally costs X, if you'll do Y for me, you know, for my nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, you know, we can, you know, everyone wins in the process. So it's just been kind of a neat approach it's been neat for me anyway, and I think that people can grab a hold of this. What you talked about specialization leading to extinction, I think that, and we've seen plenty of examples where, for instance, the record industry, music industry, was invested in these 12-inch discs called LPs, and you can't pick them up anymore unless you are going at a yard sale and they got a few for sale for $1 a piece.
Right.
But there's a thing called digital technology came on the scene, and almost overnight, this multi-billion-dollar industry had to turn on a dime, had to turn and do something different in the way they dealt with the delivery of music. So we've seen technology come in, carve out giant segments of industry, never to be replaced again, and we all have to be thinking about the reinvention. So if someone is involved in one thing, they have to think about, okay, do I make money only when I show up? If that's the case, then, you know, it's a business model that needs to be rethought. And that's why I create books, DVDs, so that I can duplicate myself, and not just add to what I'm doing, but to multiply. So that this moment, I have 6 books in 28 languages. I never thought of myself as a writer. And I have a whole segment of the book called If I Can Write, You Can Write, and how to expand your influence. And I believe that if you're a roofer, why not write a book on the history of roofing? Set yourself apart from all of the roofers, and then you develop it as a private label. So then you contact roofers and other markets around North America and say, how would you like to buy quantities of my booklet? I can make sure your company is stamped on the back cover. And now, instead of doing roofing as the major thing, you're now selling booklets to roofers so they can market their roofing businesses. You know, just things like that, that a person now begins to not only do roofing, but now they have this whole industry on the side that is not dependent upon the local economy on roofing being done. They can now help other people become more successful at what they're doing. So that just is a simple example of how to multiply one's efforts.
Do you suggest that an entrepreneur start their own nonprofit based on either their personal beliefs, or should they align themselves with a cause that's aligned with their for-profit business?
Well, I think that when you look at a lot of nonprofits, you look at the pie, how much money is spent for administrative costs, it's scary. A lot of nonprofits, I have a very dim view of how they function. But I think that if you're part of a church or something like that, you know, might want to bring it under the umbrella as kind of an outreach, an arm of a religious organization or another nonprofit that's doing something that's very similar, that gives you a certain measure of autonomy to do what you want to do in the way that you want to do it, maybe with a whole other line item to the budget, so that whatever monies you raise, a percentage goes off for their administrative costs, but then you get to use the other according to the way that what you however you want to use them. Or you can develop your own nonprofit, and there's an organization called 501c3.org, and it's a group out of Nashville. That's all they do is create nonprofits. They're just excellent at it. And then there's other ways that a person can approach this. But I personally, I like doing it under my own umbrella, you know, being able to have my own board and make my own decisions, because I know that I can control the percentage that goes to the actual nonprofit effort that I want to be involved in.
Right. Okay.
You know, it's so interesting with the publication late last year of Bill Clinton's book. I think it was called Giving.
Yes.
You know, the rise in the number of individuals and families and things that are choosing to do just what you described. And for those of you who may not know, there is a great nonprofit organization online called Kiva, KIVA.org, which is a really interesting business model, which allows you to actually give microloans in sums as small as $25 to entrepreneurs around the world. And I joined, and I made a loan, and I get periodic reports, usually monthly, to let me know how that entrepreneur is paying my money back. And when my money is paid back, I can then either take that money back with interest, or I can reinvest it and the interest in another Kiva business. And I think that's a really neat way to participate in a way that's a total win-win for everyone else. You get your money back.
Wow.
I love it. In fact, I was just going to mention that, Kiva.org. It's just a great microfinancing idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an example, Dawn, of getting involved in something that's already happening. You don't have to deal with the infrastructure. It's already set up for you. And
right.
Then you can help someone in India or West Africa who is starting a bicycle repair service or a tailor company, you know, business, and you know, they need is $750 to get started,
mm-hmm.
and they have people on the ground there who make sure that the money is being used for the purpose and it was intended. You have a face, you have a name, and you keep up with them. It's just very exciting.
Well, Dawn and I were talking before the show, Joel, about how we had a really unique way to think about contributing, and that would be when you're taking all these trips to open these organizations, you need someone to carry your bags for you.
I will be available for that.
Certainly, you can't be doing all that heavy lifting by yourself.
You have to stand in line. There's a lot of people who want to do that.
Yeah, I bet. Go get your own nonprofit, right?
In fact, I have four children. In fact, I took my daughter with me to Africa. My kids have traveled all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
I did something with them called, it's a website called tripswithdad.com. But I promised my kids, when you turn 15, you go anywhere in the world with Dad. And we've been to Egypt, to Australia, to Italy, to Hawaii, to all over the place, Barbados. And it's just to kind of reestablish eye contact at 15 years of age so we can somehow work through the next few years that are troubling in many families. And
mm-hmm.
that's the way I can, you know, because I travel quite a bit, that way when I'm away from home, I've got one of my kids with me. And it becomes a way to bond with one person.
Do I want to hang out at the mall with my friends or go to Hawaii? Gee, you know, that's an interesting question. Mine are 4 and 6, so I have a couple of years to plan.
Yeah.
How many websites
start now?
Own?
What's that?
How many website domains do you own?
It's last count, I think it was somewhere around 250.
And, Dawn, what was your question?
No, I was just telling you to start now with your kids. I'm sorry. There's a little delay there.
Yeah, it's, you know, but here's the point of my question and your great answer, Joel, and that is that the talents that you have, I think you said it really well earlier in the show when you said define your strengths and put a particular spin on it. Is that those people out there who have businesses doing something in particular are certainly good at more than just that thing. Dawn's a great example. She's got the beauty products. She's got these relationships with the Pucalitas that she's also good at being involved in, as well as utilizing them for the benefit of the business. She's authored a book. She's been on radio shows and TV shows to empower and encourage other entrepreneurs. And so, I mean, she's in the midst of what looks to me like an expansion of her own, which seems to be sort of an organic thing. It's not like she's, you know, staying up 24 hours a day trying to think of new ways to do it. It seems to be just growing because she's putting herself out there and putting one foot in front of the other.
I love it. And that's what it is. It really is. You know, a lot of this stuff seems glamorous, you know, but it's not. It's the late nights. It's while everyone else is sleeping, you're awake, thinking, writing, planning. While everyone else is wondering about stuff, you're moving forward. And you got the same questions, but you're moving with the information that you've got, with the finances you've got, the people that are around you, or the lack of people around you. You're still taking a look at what you have, not what you don't have, and you start building on what you have. And sometimes people just have to take a look at their resources and make something of it. I'm in the process of reinvention right now, where I've always been behind the scenes working with 7 to 12 to 15, 18 people in corporate boardroom. And for the first time, I'm doing a huge event in May 30th in Hampton, Virginia, with Hampton University at the Convocation Center. Seats 8,200 people. No one knows my name because I'm kind of like a behind the scenes type of guy. But now I'm reinventing it to bring it into a larger venue, and just to see what can happen. So if people go to ignitehamptonroads.com, they'll see a website about an event happening in May, and that's me in the reinvention process right now. And you'll see how how a group of people came together with the idea of how to take my anonymity and to use it as a strength instead of a vulnerability.
Do you find that a lot of your reinvention kind of, not to say just happens, but paths and doors just open up and you just kind of take a chance and see where it's going to lead, how it's going to open up, or do you have things planned out from the beginning? I myself am not a planner, and maybe that's why it's been successful.
Well, there are some things I plan for. I'm very strategic in some ways. In other ways, it's just opportunities that open up. But I find that sometimes, you know, it's kind of like a weird situation that happens with some people. Open opportunities close minds. You know, some people are not looking for the opportunity. They're not available. They're not taking advantage of the opportunities that are knocking on their door. And so I think it's good to keep that curiosity alive, keep the eyes open, ears open, and to be available and ready. So that when you recognize, wow, this is an opportunity to take advantage of it. And so part of that is personal development, where a person is ready to take advantage. Because sometimes, you know, like I worked with a lot of professional athletes. They can draw a crowd, but what do you have to say when the crowd gets there? And if you can draw a crowd, do you have the kind of depth to be able to handle that kind of elevation of success? It's kind of like a 70-foot skyscraper versus a two-story house. You know, if I'm building a two-story house, I get to go through the zoning process, I lay down a pad, and 28 days later after the concrete cures, I can start building and have the superstructure up within weeks. But if I'm building a 70-story skyscraper, it takes probably 2 or 3 years to go through the zoning process, to dig down to bedrock, to use the right PSI cement, the right type of rebar, and there's no above-ground results yet. But I'm building for a 70-story skyscraper. And I think that's the way it is with success, is that we do all the unglamorous stuff. We take the time and the diligence to do a full 360 around what we're all about, to read incessantly, to read about things that might not even relate to it. And then to give away. You know, it's kind of like baseball. Most games are won with singles and doubles, to use another metaphor. But it's that home run. You know, you got that home run mentality. Most entrepreneurs have a home run. I want to hit that home run type of thing, but I say spend 85% of your time hitting singles and doubles.
Down in the trenches. That is such good advice, and I'm so.
And then reserve 15% for that home run mentality. But
right.
If you're always in the home run, you're going to give everyone around you whiplash.
Right. Well, amazing advice and a great way to end. And speaking of reading, you guys, If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand by Dr. Joel A. Freeman. Go to freemaninstitute.com and you'll be taken into a whole new world of opportunities. I love what you said about open opportunities, closed minds. I encourage everyone, all of us, including me, to really examine that thought and every day take a look at the open opportunities that are before you and be conscious about whether you're closing your mind to some of them. Thank you for joining us on Indie Business Radio today, Joel. It's been great
to have you. My pleasure and my honor. Thank you, both of you.
Thank you. Dawn, thank you for joining me as well. Next week, Robin Ryan, career coach, is going to be here to talk with us about how to set up your business, how to coach yourself to indie business success. That's next week, January 28th, right here on Indie Business Radio. I'll see you then. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.